From KUOW, 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. In the past decade, blue-collar jobs disappeared. But in the coming decade, that tide is expected to change. The Bureau of Labor Statistics projects an additional 2.7 million new blue-collar jobs by 2020. That includes carpenters, plumbers, electricians, iron workers, and home care workers. Many of those jobs pay well, and most can never be shipped overseas. Maybe you're a blue-collar worker. Are you happy with your career choice? Give me a call, 206-543-5869. Did you always intend on getting a job in the trades, possibly because of a family tradition? It's 800-289-5869. Or maybe you graduated college and found that there were more opportunities in blue-collar work. You can write to us, conversation@kuow.org. Back in 2011, we talked about this. Plumber Deborah Henry told me she was hopping.
It's booming. I am way too busy. I work weekends almost every weekend.
How much does a plumber make, if you don't mind me getting too personal here?
I charge $90 an hour, which is really cheap for Seattle. I'm one of the cheapest legal plumbers in Seattle.
Well, working for yourself is, of course, a giant satisfaction, but a lot of people work for themselves, whether they're in the trades or not. What about being in the trades is satisfying to you? What's satisfying about being a plumber?
You know, I'm a small residential plumber, so every job I do is different. There's a lot of problem solving involved and just working with my hands. A lot of times I work with my clients. They love learning plumbing, and it's super satisfying for the most part.
We also spoke to Lee Nugent, who was working had worked as an iron worker and then became executive secretary of the Seattle Building and Construction Trades. He told me blue-collar work just is not valued.
Oh, no, there's no focus on it in schools. Everything is college bound, so we end up spending 85% of our school resources on that 5 to 10% of students that go to college.
But what Lee liked about blue collar work was the variety.
The best part of the job is that you don't have to work for one employer every single day and go to the same cubicle in a downtown high-rise. You get to work on different projects wherever you may want to be, and that could include spending the winters in Hawaii or spending the winters in Vegas or working overseas or anything along that line.
We're talking about blue-collar work. What is it? How do you get it? What's good? What's bad about it? 206-543-5869. You could be a fisherman headed to Alaska. You could be a plumber. You could be a carpenter. It's 800-289-5869. You can write to us, conversation@kuow.org. As I mentioned, by the year 2020, there's expected to be 2.7 million new blue-collar jobs. But Tim Sweeney, who joins us from Washington State's Workforce Training and Education Coordination Board, says although the jobs are there, we need the way to get people into those jobs and also need to adjust our attitude about what blue-collar work means. Thank you so much for stopping by, Tim.
Well, thank you, Ross.
So there's this common perception that blue-collar jobs are dirty, they're low-skilled, and they're low-paying. What's wrong with that image?
Well, it is based on an economy, on jobs that come from our history and from the TVs and movie shows. So it really is changing. If you think of blue collar as being a uniform you wear or work clothing that you wear, then those are jobs that can run the sweep of pretty much everything that makes our economy go, from getting us to work through on buses and on the roads, to roofing us, to feeding us, to the power we're using, the wiring all this wiring that was on this table here and then providing sound to us. All these were done by people with skills that are really could be considered blue collar, but are really what we consider middle skilled jobs that don't necessarily require a bachelor's degree, but do require some sort of training and do provide a very healthy income as well as a lot of job satisfaction.
Yeah, and from people I've spoken to, it also provides a lot of job satisfaction because you actually see something constructed sometimes. The way that you're able to work can be semi-independent. There seem to be a lot of non-financial reasons why people enjoy this kind of work.
Right. It's not work that's just strictly with your hands. You do need your mind with it. So
sure.
It's a combination of doing things with your hands, but a lot of knowledge as well. And so for instance, I was on a production floor that did equipment for aluminum smelters over in Spokane. Very, very your classic factory, huge building. And yet it was very clean operation, and there were computer terminal monitors at every workstation. But these guys would then turn around and then work with their hands and form things based on designs that they were reading off the computer. So they had to be able to understand what they were looking at on the computer and then convert that into something solid.
We're talking about blue-collar jobs. You don't necessarily need a four-year liberal arts degree to get a blue-collar job. You often do need additional training after high school. Maybe you've gone out and gotten one. 206-543-5869. Have you found that to be a satisfying choice for you? That number is kind of staggering, 2.7 million blue-collar jobs, new blue-collar jobs by the year 2020. What areas of growth will we see here in Washington State if someone is thinking about this as an opportunity for them coming up?
Well, actually, very much in the field of repair and installation. So just about anything that you can install into a building, commercial building or a home, and then the repair of that. And that can run from the air conditioning unit that keeps us cool or heating unit to telephone wires, cable wire, the cabling system, the computer system. So anybody who can keep a network, computer network running, phone system operating, the electricity distribution system that we have is very important, and a lot of demand for those jobs, and those jobs pay very well.
Is there a shortage in those areas right now?
In some areas of the state, there are, and it really is. It depends on what's going on, and what's happening with the economy and the supply of workers. But certain areas of the state are really in demand for, particularly also healthcare is another area that we don't think of as blue collar and really aren't, don't meet that traditional standard. Even though many might wear a uniform, but they do require some skills that again don't necessarily require a 4-year degree, but do require something beyond a high school diploma, and they pay quite well and have hours that really sometimes work well with people's schedules.
Tim Sweeney's with me. He's with Washington State's Workforce Training and Education Coordination Board. Stick with us, Tim. Maybe you're a blue-collar worker. Tell us about your experience with it. 206-543-5869. Maybe you used to be a blue-collar worker, did not find it satisfying. It's 800-289-5869. Joining us now on the line, Dan Jacoby, an economist and professor at the University of Washington who researches education and labor. Dan, thanks for talking to us today.
Sure thing.
With industry changing so rapidly and becoming increasingly automated, are blue-collar jobs still important?
Yeah, they definitely are important.
Why?
Well, I think what you're seeing is a lot of changes in technology that are changing the way in which work is done on the shop floor. So that oftentimes people have to be able to work with multiple machines. They have to be able to read output. They have to be able to diagnose problems. That in many ways you're seeing that the old factory where there were lots and lots of workers and on the floor has changed. So that oftentimes there might be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 workers with multi-million-dollar machines. And to the extent that they're working with those kinds of machines, they've got to be responsible, capable, and it's just changed the whole nature of that kind of work.
There's a perception, and we even heard it expressed earlier in this segment, that we're spending too much time, I mean, maybe not too much, but an unbalanced amount of time and intention on 4-year liberal arts degrees and not enough on the kind of training to get people these sorts of jobs. In fact, Lee Nugent told us a few years ago that he felt that only 5 to 10% of students go on to college, and we're spending 85% of our money on education in that area. Is that accurate, first of all?
It's a little understatement on how many people are going to college. There's quite a few more. There's 30% of the folks actually graduate from college, and some with advanced degrees, and more are entering college. But certainly there's a lot of emphasis now on the college level. And I think that there are certainly areas where people could be targeting for blue-collar training, and that would be a big assistance.
When you take a step back and look at where we're spending our money in this state, we're spending a fair amount at your institution, at the place that I also work, the University of Washington. Do you think we're doing enough to encourage training for these kinds of jobs when it comes to our education system?
Well, no, I don't think that we are doing enough in a lot of ways. I mean, I think I'd like to just disagree slightly with the previous speaker just in terms
sure.
of the quality of jobs. There are really good jobs in the blue-collar industry, but there's also some jobs that are not so good. And what we really need to be able to do is to have people move from the less pleasant jobs into the more challenging jobs. And that's where we really have not done a whole lot and have not been successful.
Give me an example of what you mean, like moving up the ladder from maybe a less skilled blue-collar job to a higher skilled job. Where does that ladder go?
If you were in a hospital and you were working for in bedpans, moving up to a nurse's assistant and possibly moving up to a nurse, that would be a movement from more of a less satisfying job to a more satisfying job. Certainly there would be all sorts of areas where you could see people being involved with the organization in fairly routine characteristics. Once they've gotten familiar with the environment, if there were ways to be trained and promoted, they might be able to do that. They also might be able to move across firms. And I think that's the areas where we're really failing, both in terms of providing upward mobility and movement across firms.
Dan Jacoby, economist and professor at the University of Washington. Thank you for your time, sir.
Sure.
Tim Sweeney's with us in the studio. He's with Washington State's Workforce Training and Education Coordination Board. Tim, what do you think about what Dan just had to say? He's pointing out that there are some kind of low-skilled blue-collar jobs, and he says one of the problems here is that there's not a way for people who are cleaning out those bedpans to move into the higher-skilled jobs. What do you think about that?
Actually, I agree with him completely. Lifelong learning is something we should all be pursuing. The idea that we would start with a job and stay with it for 35 years and retire with a gold watch and a retirement is just not possible anymore. You have to continuously be improving your skills to be able to not only keep up with the changes in the job, but also to be able to move yourself and advance yourself into a better standard of living. We really do need to be looking at more and ways and how employers can be participating in this process too, and creating ways for employees to be able to learn on the job, as well as making it easier and accessible education, easier and more accessible to these working adults.
Let's go to Sarah, who's listening to us today in the Central District. We're talking about blue collar jobs. Maybe you've done it. Maybe you didn't like it. Maybe you did like it. What about you, Sarah?
Hi. A number of years ago, I was part of a local union, and the pay is good, but I had just came back. I went into owning a business for about 6 years, and I came back into the union, and it's difficult as a female to be you're sitting in a room, you're listening to interview after interview and people getting hired,
mm-hmm.
and then you don't get hired, and it's frustrating as a woman, and I've talked to the union that I'm a part of, and there's just not a lot of women coming in, and the
yeah.
reason why, and it's good pay, it's about $34 an hour.
Right, but do you think there's some gender discrimination going on here?
There's absolutely gender discrimination.
Sarah, tell me when did you have this experience? You said it was some years ago. How long ago was that? That you experienced this gender discrimination when you were trying to get into the trades.
Okay. Well, so I'm going to disclose this. I'm a transsexual female, and I transitioned 9 years ago.
Okay.
And I ended up leaving the union because the discrimination as a woman that started, being kind of perpetrated against me.
Right.
It was just too much. I had to leave.
Yeah.
And, I get asked questions as a woman that I was never asked as a man.
Right.
And I'm telling you, and it exists.
Sarah, thanks a lot for your phone call. I appreciate it. And bringing up this issue, we do kind of, at least in the popular mind, consider the trades to be male-dominated. Now, there are some particular issues that might have been involved with Sarah's experiences. But, Tim, what do you have to say about that? Is it harder for women to break into the trades? Is there still a barrier because there might not be nearly as many of them as there are men?
Well, I can only go with the research that we have, and that I can tell you that apprenticeships, which are very heavily trade-focused, are predominantly men that are going through those programs and completing them. The women that do go through the programs, and even if they only do half of the program or don't complete, still do very well and make a good living. Part of the issue is really that kind of patterns of women not necessarily being that the construction industry, for instance, being more considered a male activity, when I think that really needs to be changed. And there are methods to do that. There's a pizza pop and power tool program out in Spokane.
Pizza pop and power tool?
Absolutely. And what they do is it's very much focused on the high schools and encourage young women to get out there and start messing with this equipment.
Yeah.
They work on jackhammers and lifts and and those hammers that are automated. And,
yeah.
And they get they basically give them a taste of what it's like and say, yes, you can do this.
Yeah, we've got a few more minutes here. Maybe you're a woman who works in the trades and would like to talk about what your experience has been. Is there is that an issue for you as a woman to get involved in some of these trades that might be non-traditional for women to get into? Let's go to Deborah. She's calling us today from Lake City. Deborah, thanks for taking the time to give us a call today. What's been your involvement in blue-collar work?
Oh, I own my own business for about 8 years.
What's the business, Deborah?
Pardon?
What is the business?
It was construction cleaning for custom homes.
Okay.
And it was very lucrative. I had a small crew, so it was about quality, not quantity. And I found that the discrimination came a lot from women.
Really? Could you give an example of that?
A lot of them, they didn't really think that you could do the job. They'd rather give the job to a man, which I found very interesting. That was a little bit challenging, but I did get past that, and I became very successful. So,
did you start with your own business, Deborah, or did you begin just doing the cleaning and then develop a business out of that?
I just started doing cleaning with businesses, janitorial, and then I stopped doing that because I found out construction cleaning was a lot more lucrative.
Yeah. And are you still in that business?
No, I actually quit that for family reasons, but I actually am glad that I did that because it taught my family a really good work ethic.
Yeah. Hey, Deborah, thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate that. Traditionally, trade unions have been an entry into some of these professions with these apprenticeship programs. When we see the shortage in workers in certain areas, are the trade unions just not training enough people to get them in these areas where workers are needed?
Well, that's usually through the apprenticeship programs,
yes.
And it does require finding an employer willing to be able to underwrite the apprenticeship, and they do work closely with the organizations, labor organizations, to make that happen. In those cases, they do scale up, but it takes time. Sometimes an apprenticeship can take 4 years, and if you need somebody right now, a journeyman right away, it can pose a problem. In the construction field particularly, we had a situation where before the bust, we were looking at a severe shortage in construction, skilled construction workers, and we were trying to gear up our training system to deal with that, and then it busted.
Yeah.
And then now what do we do?
You know? Quick final question for you. The state's been in a world of hurt when it comes to the state budget. There have been cuts to with the higher education institutions and the community colleges. How has that affected the ability of getting people trained for blue-collar jobs in our state?
Well, it's affecting our community and technical college programs particularly. We geared up a bit during the recession, but now those dollars that were flowing are starting to scale back right at a time when our economy is beginning to flourish. And we're going to start seeing skill gaps in areas that are very much in the blue-collar field because we're just can't afford to put the money we need to in our community college.
Tim Sweeney's with Washington State's Workforce Training and Education Coordination Board. Tim, thanks so much for stopping by.
All right, thanks.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds.